The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network. I want to mention a great resource for writers, and this month's sponsor, Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories. I'll expound later in the show, but the short version is this long-awaited book about the craft of creative writing from New York Times bestselling author Steve Almond sets out to debunk the well-meaning but misguided myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and most honest work. Pick up a copy today of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, wherever you buy books, more soon. Greetings, scribes. I have got some exciting news to share. The Writer Files now has an exclusive Patreon community where subscribers will get exclusive access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and content from productivity and publishing experts each month. In the meantime, just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles. It's free to join Patreon to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something special.
Forty-nine different rejections, but eventually some agents took pity on me more than anything, probably, and said, "Hey, I think I can represent this book." And lo and behold, it sold. Then another one sold, and my clients became suspicious something was wrong with their veterinarian. You know, mostly because of posters in the lobby that says, "Get your cat spayed, get a free book." Questions would arise across the exam table. "Dr. Jim, you have the successful veterinary hospital. What's this writing stuff you're doing? What's your long-term goals with all of this?" And I'm thinking, I'm just gonna finish draining your dog's anal glands, but I will try to explain this as well as I can. For 15 years, veterinary medicine was my paycheck and writing was a hobby. Maybe down the line, it'd be fun to see that reverse where veterinary medicine becomes my hobby and writing becomes my paycheck.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am still your grateful host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. Number one New York Times bestselling author James Rollins spoke to me about his alter ego, veterinarian Dr. Jim, how to write two staccato-paced novels a year, and his latest Sigma Force installment, Tides of Fire. James is the number one New York Times bestselling author of the Sigma Force series, six standalone adventure thrillers, a novelization of the Indiana Jones franchise, and many others, totaling over 44 novels, and even he can't remember the exact number. His latest and his most popular series is Tides of Fire, a Sigma Force novel set on an international research station in the Coral Sea that comes under siege during a geological disaster and triggers massive quakes, deadly tsunamis, and volcanic eruptions. To stop the world from burning, it's up to Sigma Force to uncover a secret buried at the heart of our planet. Publishers Weekly said of the book, "The X-Files meets SEAL Team 6 in Rollins' imaginative, pulse-pounding 17th Sigma Force thriller. Rollins' gleeful everything-but-the-kitchen-sink approach works well here, nimbly balancing popcorn action with mind-blowing scientific speculation." James's novels have sold over 20 million copies and are published in more than 40 languages worldwide. In this file, James and I discussed how 49 rejections early in his career didn't sway his passion for writing. Keeping all of the plots and characters organized in his many series, the panic that comes with every undertaking, why he adds illustrations and appendices to his books, the unique research process that goes into his prescient novels, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. Yes, we are back on The Writer Files. I am honored today to be joined by an esteemed guest. Yes, we have number one New York Times bestselling author James Rollins is hanging out with us today. Thanks so much for taking the time to do this.
I appreciate it. I appreciate also the description of esteemed. Not quite sure that applies to me, but I'll accept it.
Okay. For today, you can be esteemed. And yeah, I can't wait to talk about your latest, Tides of Fire, and of course, this storied writing career, which is kind of head spinning. I'm sure as you look back, you kind of can't believe it yourself, but we want to talk about that. And of course, yeah, this long string of very successful international thrillers and all the inspiration and research that goes into these intense books. And yeah, let's talk about kind of your superhero origins, because, you know, we always joke about, you know, kind of these 10-year overnight successes that authors encounter, and take us back a little bit, because, you know, I understand that you once were a veterinarian and have had an alternate life, but were always kind of a storyteller. So talk a little bit about kind of this really, really fascinating, circuitous route to where you are today.
Well, I still do practice veterinary medicine. I often will attest, you know, it's really cool to have number one New York Times bestselling author written across the top of my cover jackets. But the greater claim to fame is I can still neuter a cat in under 30 seconds. I still work with a group that traps feral cats, wild cats. They bring them to the shelter, and one Sunday a month, I spay and neuter them. So I still keep my, you know, my toe in the water, so to speak, because that was always my first passion, was veterinary medicine. You know, that's what I career tracked towards. I knew from third grade I wanted to be a veterinarian. Got that assignment you get some point in your school years where the teacher says, hey, go home, write a few paragraphs about what you want to be when you grow up. And I remember I wanted to be veterinarian. I remember this. I had a blank sheet of paper in front of me, just didn't know how to spell the word veterinarian. So I thought I could cheat and put policeman, fireman, go out and play. But I did the one thing all, you know, third graders hate to do. I got the dictionary and looked it up, determined from, you know, third grade to be a veterinarian. And it's pretty much us, you know, I'd never thought a career as a writer. I mean, I read a lot, and I thought, you know, wouldn't it be cool at some point to walk into a bookstore and see my book on a shelf, but it never seemed like a viable career path. You can do this, and this, and become a successful veterinarian, and you can do this, and this, and fail horribly as a writer. So I decided I'm going to go ahead and, you know, career track towards veterinary medicine, and you know, I got accepted, but, you know, so the other side of my personality was a storyteller. I grew up with three brothers and three sisters, and, you know, my goal in life was to, you know, convince them of the most outlandish tales I could possibly come up with. And, you know, if usually the scarier, the better. If tears were involved, even better. And, you know, my mom called it lying. I call it storytelling. And, you know, so like when you're reading, that's like throwing gasoline on that side of your brain. And so even though I, you know, got accepted into vet school, went through my veterinary school years, and, you know, started as an employed vet, eventually, you know, started my own clinic, and I had that clinic for about 15 years. I just began writing as a hobby, and there was no intention beyond maybe seeing a short story published, maybe seeing, you know, heaven forbid that I should actually believe that I can get a book published. But, you know, it was something fun to do. It was a social outlet. There was a group here in Sacramento, a writer's club that had that broke into little critique groups. And I still belong to that same critique group I joined, let's say 30 years ago. Let's pretend that's the real number. Yeah. So I didn't have any success trying to sell any of my short stories, but based upon that extreme amount of success, I decided I was confident enough to do my first novel. And I got a lot of rejections for that, 49 different rejections, but eventually some agents took pity on me more than anything, probably. And said, hey, I think I can represent this book. And lo and behold, it sold. And another one sold. And my clients became suspicious something was wrong with their veterinarian, you know, mostly because of, you know, posters in the lobby that says, you know, get your cat spayed, get a free book. questions would arise across the exam table. You know, Dr. Jim, you have the successful veterinary hospital. What's this writing stuff you're doing? You know, what's your long-term goals with all of this? And I'm thinking, oh, well, I'm just going to finish draining your dog's anal glands, but I will try to explain this as well as I can. You know, for 15 years, veterinary medicine was my paycheck and writing was a hobby. You know, maybe down the line, it'd be fun to see that reverse where veterinary medicine becomes my hobby and writing becomes my paycheck. And that's pretty much where I'm at this point. Like I said, I still do some volunteer work and I can still spay and neuter on a regular basis. So I've pretty much achieved that goal at this point where, you know, I earn my living via writing, but I just treat my veterinary medicine career as a hobby.
Yeah. That's quite a story to where you are today, which requires a study of a bibliography that stretches for, let's see how many pages. I'm on one of like 25 pages here. So do you know, like, have you lost track of the number of actual books? Because we're talking about Tides of Fire today, obviously, is a Sigma Force novel, which has been this incredibly successful series. But you write multiple series, you've written under multiple pen names, and yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible to see that we even need separate reader's guides for the different, you know, things that you've been juggling this whole time.
Yeah, it's useful for me to have those guides also as I jump between the different series. It's like, okay, let me refresh myself, you know, who all these characters are, what their ages are, what color their eyes are. It's nice to have those Bibles readily available. As to the number of books, Tides of Fire is my 17th Sigma novel. I believe that's correct. And I've been saying this during this book tour that I'm on my 44th novel. I've been saying that for a few years, so I'm not quite sure that's accurate anymore. Because somebody asked me that before. Somebody came on Q&A and said, "Jimmy, you said you had 44 books, and that was like 3 years ago." I know you've done more books since then.
Right.
Okay, maybe
right.
I have better recount that number.
Right.
Somewhere in that vicinity.
The New York Times said Rollins is what you might wind up with if you tossed Michael Crichton and Dan Brown into a particle accelerator together. Two other kind of giants in the space whose names also appear larger than the titles. It would appear that you have grown to that level of acclaim.
Yeah, it is weird. I mean, like I said, my goal was to walk into a bookstore and see, you know, one book on the shelf. But now, you know, I have a shelf of books out there, which is it's a weird thing to see.
Yeah, it's like truly like a library of the Rollins oeuvre. Earlier in the show, I mentioned an invaluable resource for writers. Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories based on 3 decades of writing, failing, and trying again. Author Steve Almond is a beloved professor at Harvard and Wesleyan and the acclaimed New York Times bestseller of 12 books of fiction and nonfiction. And in Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, Steve employs the radical empathy he displayed as a co-host of the Dear Sugars podcast with Cheryl Strayed, where they explored the joys and trials of storytelling to explode myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and truest work. The book includes chapters on plot, character, and chronology, but travels far beyond the earnest intentions of most craft books. It also includes writing prompts to generate new work. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Richard Russo called it one of the best books on writing he's ever read, and also the funniest. Pick up a copy of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories wherever you buy books, and add it to your TBR today. And just a quick aside to revisit the exclusive Writer Files Patreon community, where subscribers get access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and a lot more. I know that for serious writers, it can be more distracting than ever to cut through the noise, stay productive, and home in on what's happening in the publishing industry. Over 8 years, we've provided a looking glass into the habits of professional writers and publishing industry insiders. And as your humble host, I've decided to launch a membership-based Patreon for serious scribes to cut through the noise, swap tips and tricks, and hang out with like-minded peers. Just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles for bonus writing resources, monthly episode breakdowns, writer's happy hour, a community of your peers, ad-free episodes, and more. It's free to join. To get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something cool and special. Keep calm and write on. Looking back, yeah, probably somewhat unbelievable to you, but have you had any moments? I know, because now you speak with, you know, writers groups and authors and you know, you share some mentoring and wisdom and advice and speak to bigger groups. But was there ever a moment of kind of like, you know, I've talked to many authors before about this kind of disbelief or almost like, you know, like this feeling of imposter syndrome at some point when the success grows to such a level of expectation?
Definitely. And I don't think I ever quite escaped that feeling that, you know, this is not my true career. I still sometimes, people say, "What do you do for a living?" And my first thing is, "I'm a veterinarian." Oh, but now I write books. So my default is still veterinarian is my career. And I'm just lucky to, you know, be able to add the caveat that, oh yes, by the way, I also write these books on the side. And again, it might be a matter, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons I still do my volunteer work. I still expect at some point somebody to say, "Hey, Jim, you know, you really can't write. We just realized, you know, pick up that scalpel and go back to your real job."
Oh,
even after this point. And it happens with every book. For any writers out there, they probably can relate to this. You know, early on in my career, I'd start a book and be really excited about it. It's this bright, shiny penny in my head, and I can't wait to get it onto paper. And you start it, and you're enthusiastic about it. And then you get about to the mid part of the books, and then you think, "Oh my gosh, this is horrible. I don't know what I'm doing. I've written myself into a corner. I've juggled too many balls into the air. They're not going to drop where they need to drop them." And then I get this panic of that. You know, this is the end of my career. This book is going to be James Rollins just jumped the shark. This is the last book he's ever going to write. But then, of course, I've got a deadline, so I just put my head down and just grind through that. And, once I get to the end and the end is in sight and I get finished, and the book was great. I know what I was thinking about. That won't happen next time. Oh, yeah, it does every single time. I just finished the sequel to Tides of Fire, and halfway through the book's called Archangel. Halfway through that book, I'm thinking, I don't know what I'm doing. This isn't going to work. I've lost it. But it worked out fine.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. And congrats, of course, on Tides of Fire, the latest out now. And I thought I was going to read a couple quick reviews. The X-Files meets SEAL Team 6 in Rollins' imaginative pulse-pounding 17th Sigma Force thriller. This gleeful everything but the kitchen sink approach works well here, nimbly balancing popcorn action with mind-blowing scientific speculation. Author's rarely been better at making the implausible feel plausible. And that's something that's been said about your work often, of course, taking unseen worlds, scientific breakthroughs, and historical secrets and kind of mixing them into this signature brew. And Lee Child, of course, even said, nobody does this stuff better, which, some high praise from some big name peers. It would seem, it's got to feel good. What's the vibe about how was the book tour? You were out there kind of mixing it up and clad handing a little bit and meeting your readers and fans?
Yeah, it's always a great deal of fun because writing's a solitary profession. I share my chapters with my critique group, but mostly you're just talking to yourself in your office and hoping that this joke works or this action set piece is as exciting as it seems to you. So to go out into the on a book tour is almost like a victory lap. You get to go out there and hear what people are saying about it. It's fun seeing the enthusiasm, jacks you up to be able to continue on with your next book because now you sort of see your audience that you're trying to address with your books. And when you see their enthusiasm, it lights a fire under you a little bit to try to do better or at least keep up that same level of excitement.
Yeah, that's cool. And as you had mentioned, Tides of Fire, you kind of describe as a disaster movie in novel format. And I'm very taken by not only the amount of real world research that you do for the books and kind of incorporating almost rip from the headline stuff, which we can talk about, but the illustrations and these kind of appendices of notes from the scientific record and so on and so forth. That must be fun for you to kind of put together because it seems like a part, that not every thriller writer is doing kind of for these, I would say, meticulously plotted thrillers.
Whenever I read a book, I like, when there's some illustrations or drawings or maps. And so, with Tides of Fire, there's a lot in there, mostly because some of it needed some, they always say pictures with 1,000 words. So I can get a lot across by just adding a little picture to the prose itself. In regards to the science, my goal is hopefully when you're reading the book, your pulse is pounding and you're wanting to get to your next chapter and you're going to read it until late into the evening or even, overnight. But I'm hoping that when someone closes the book, they're left with a little bit of something to think about. I have that what's true, what's not section that I conclude each book where I sort of pull aside the curtain and share, how much of the book is based on fact and how much is based on fiction or my own imagination or extrapolation. And I offer some breadcrumbs for if there's any topics that are of intrigue to the audience, they could pick up those breadcrumbs and follow them. So, one of the greatest compliments I get is, "Hey, Jim, I enjoyed that book, but I was really interested in this aspect of the story. So I went ahead and looked a little deeper into it, and I have some questions about that, or I'm curious about this." So it's fun having that dialogue about sort of the reality based, behind the fictional story that I'm telling.
Yeah, for sure. And you've been lauded for that in this series, especially. Wall Street Journal had mentioned science fiction and archaeology have had a long relationship. The link is a conviction that there is a hidden truth in the relics of dead civilizations, and that this can be uncovered by what we now know about science. And they said, I thought this was a very complimentary thing to say. They said, the dominant figure in this area of fiction right now is James Rollins. And that seems like high praise there.
You know, Michael, when I was first starting to write, I thought I was writing science fiction. You know, my first book, Subterranean, had telepathic marsupial creatures that were living underneath Antarctica. So to me, I thought I'm writing science fiction. My editor said, oh, no, it can't be science fiction because you said it in modern times. Therefore, it's a thriller, and that's the way we're going to publish it. So, and while I was growing up, again, I mentioned I read a lot, and I was throwing gasoline on that twisted corner of my brain, but I didn't lump myself to one genre. I'm in my office right now, and I've got, you know, mysteries, I've got thrillers, I've got, you know, James Michener collection, I've got old pulp novels from the 30s and 40s that I'd loved to read when I was growing up. I've got science fiction, fantasy, horror. I read anything that was sort of intrigued me. And so whenever I teach writing, I said you should write what you love to read. And unfortunately, because I love to read so much, my books become this amalgam of different types of genres. I mean, there's a military thriller aspect to the story. There's a science fiction aspect to the story. There's a fantastical element to the story. And, HarperCollins has been my publisher since Subterranean with my thrillers. And so I've been with them for quite a long time. And after I published maybe 4 or 5 books with HarperCollins, I was finally invited to the Grand Temple of HarperCollins in New York City. I had never been there before. I had never even met my editor face-to-face at this point. So this is my first introduction to the whole publishing world in New York. And I'm sitting at this big, you know, at the top of the tower of HarperCollins, at this big boardroom with this huge, long, you know, table. And there's the entire staff is there. There's a marketing department, you know, for all the different types of the sales department, the art department. At the end of the table is Michael Morrison, the head of Harper at that point. And he sort of stands up and looks, and I'm at the other side of the table, of course. And he's, you know, stares down this long table at me and goes, Jim, you know, we published a few of your books right now, but to be honest with you, we're not entirely sure what you write. which I thought, well, you published a few of my books. Hopefully you somewhat know what I write. Because my books are, a bit of a mix of, you know, archaeology and history and military thriller and, you know, espionage and spycraft and, you know, everything I love to read. So that I end up, you know, folding into my novels all into one.
Yeah.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Obviously, this book, Tides of Fire, incorporates a lot of elements that you mentioned, and as this kind of page-turning thriller, as you mentioned, this kind of disaster movie and a novel, covers a lot of ground. But I thought what I found interesting also was that you had mentioned recently that one of the issues that the new book addresses is this privatization of scientific exploration. And of course, this was that ripped from the headlines piece that you presciently kind of had tackled already. You did a lot of research on this, obviously, but with the recent headlines of the tragic implosion of that submersible that was attempting to explore the Titanic, right? Which we're all just kind of like, whoa, holding our breath, literally, because we didn't know if this thing was going to be found. It was kind of like the plot of a thriller. But yeah, it was sadly, a tragedy. But talk a little bit about, you know, kind of, I don't know. I'm super curious about it must be an intensive research process and kind of like then also in that process of not only writing this novel, as it were, how are you setting the desk, and then also simultaneously writing another series set in a different, you know, world? How are you juggling it all? Can you kind of give us a little primer on how this process works for you?
Well, some people ask me, do you like, since right now I'm writing a fantasy series and the Sigma series, one book of each comes out every year, and they ask me, do you write them simultaneously? And no, I can't. I've tried that once with Sandstorm and one of my fantasies, and it just, it's like tripping gears in your head, trying to shift between those two that frequently, because, you know, your staccato-paced thriller, you know, it's very research intense. Everything has to be factual. You know, if you're putting Starbucks in a city, you got to make sure that Starbucks is where it is, because somebody in that city is going to tag you if you're wrong about where that Starbucks is located. So every little detail has to be correct. Whereas fantasy, it's world building. You got to structure this entire multi-level society from, you know, its history to its own archaeology, to its own religion, to its own language, to its own magic system. And that requires its own level of notes that you have to keep track of. But when it comes to the basic gist of the way I handle things, is, you know, I'm always got my antenna up for those new ideas. I'm looking for those historical mysteries, those pieces of history that end in a question mark, something I can solve within the pages of a novel. Then I'm looking for those, you know, what ifs of science, things that might challenge or intrigue me, or I get to extrapolate where that's headed. Then I just try to find that history and that science that I can cobble together. And I allow myself about 90 days of advanced research, where I'm now talking to scientists. I'm doing my intense research, getting all my big questions answered before I start the book. And I like talking to scientists versus just, you know, reading their journal articles or the books they've written, because science changes very rapidly. And book writing is a long process, from those 90 days of research to the 6 months of writing the first draft to the months of editing and polishing with the publishing house. And then even when we're done with that, it's going to be another 8 to 12 months before that book hits the shelf. So during that long window, science can change. And my secret fear is, you know, I'm going to include science in a book that by the time the book gets published is going to be either proven wrong or out of date, or some other authors already handled that subject matter. So some people say, gosh, Jimmy, you seem like you're clairvoyant, because it seems like a lot of the topics that you raise in your novel, suddenly, as soon as the book comes out, it's in the news. And it's not because I'm prescient. It's just because 2 years ago, I was talking to that scientist on the phone, and I'm asking him, don't tell me what you're going to put in your next research article or book, because that information already is months, if not years old. You know, look over your shoulder and tell me what's on your work table right now. Because I need that level of immediacy so that it feels fresh when the book comes out 2 years later. And so a lot of times what will happen is a book gets published at the same time that scientist is producing this journal article that suddenly gets snapped up by, becomes a viral, you know, article about, you know, octopuses in space or something about along that line. And all of a sudden it's like, Jim, it's like you're clairvoyant that you wrote this book, and all of a sudden we're all talking about it. And no, it's not clairvoyant, just that the scientist told me about it 2 years ago. But again, I have, you know, Bibles for Sigma, I have Bibles for the fantasy books, and, you know, I just have to, I generally will, before I dive into the next book, even though I think I know the characters really well, especially with Sigma characters, you know, this 17 books, they're pretty much branded in my head, but I'll still go through just to make sure that, you know, Monk lost a hand, let's make sure that it's the right hand that you mentioned in the book that he lost, and you haven't suddenly switched hands. So it's little tiny details that are easy to get lost in the wash that the Bibles help keep me straight.
Yeah, speaking of those Bibles, are they digital? Are they like in the form of some kind of a notebook that you keep, or is it like a combination?
It's a combination. Typically what I'll do is I have, you know, all my notes already on like digital files. But when I'm actually working on a novel and I'm, you know, characters now changing because someone gets injured, so I've got to, you know, add that injury so that when they appear in the next book, the injury is still there. They haven't miraculously healed from that. That generally is handwritten. So I'll handwrite all my, you know, little additional information that I want to include. But then when I've done the book, I'll incorporate those written notes into my physical digital files.
Very cool. Are you a morning writer, an evening writer, or a combo?
I typically write in the morning just because that's when I seem to have the most free time, but I don't need to. I mean, I've written, you know, from midnight to 8 a.m. overnight. You know, when I first started to practice, or sort of the hobby of writing. I was still practicing full time as a veterinarian. So I was generally working during my lunch hour because I made a commitment to myself that I had to write 3 double space pages 5 out of 7 days of the week. So basically, it was like a page and a half, 5 out of 7 days of the week. And so I generally work on that during my lunch hour. And so during my lunch hour, I'm working in my office. So there's, you know, dogs barking, cats meowing, phones ringing, interruptions from the receptionist. So there's always a bit of chaos going on. So what I found now is I can't write in dead silence. There has to be a little bit of white noise in the background, or for some reason, I just can't concentrate. I need something to just be playing in the background. You know, now I just make a commitment to myself, since I do have to get 2 books done per year. To accomplish that, it's not an arduous task, as some people may believe. I just now write 5 double spaced pages 5 out of 7 days of the week. And if I can stick to that, it's very easy to get 2 books done. Because basically, if you're doing 5 double spaced pages, that's 25 pages a week times 52 weeks. Maybe I skip a week or here. Promotions or for going on a book tour where my writing is not as, I'm not going to do 5 pages a day when I'm on tour. But it's very simple to get 2 books done if you just stick to that regimen. So, you know, if I get busy in the morning, let's say in the morning I'm going to go kayaking or have some other obligations, then I will just, before I can put my head on my pillow, that 5th page has to be done.
Very cool. Yeah. Super inspiring. Workmanlike and kudos on the latest. Obviously, I will link to your home base there at jamesrollins.com. You're on all the socials, this great Instagram and others. And I was going to just throw in a quick description of the book, which I thought was obviously doesn't really describe it in full, but we're not doing any spoilers on this one, but your latest thriller set on an international research station in the Coral Sea that comes under siege during a geological disaster that triggers massive quakes, deadly tsunamis, and volcanic eruptions. To stop the world from burning, it's up to Sigma Force to uncover a secret buried at the heart of our planet. Were there a Sigma Force in real life, it'd probably be right about now that they'd be jumping into action, right?
Yeah, sometimes I wonder if, you know, Sigma Force isn't actually out there somewhere.
Let's hope so.
I've gone to the Smithsonian Castle where you know, supposedly Sigma Force is located, and I kept, you know, expecting at some point somebody tapped me on the shoulder and just, you're James Rollins, right? How do you know about our organization?
Exactly. You better watch your back, James. No, but really, congrats on the latest interception. And we'll be thrilled for your next installment, of course, of both series. Yeah. One last fun question. I know you got to run. Your quick final pearl of wisdom on how to keep going.
I mentioned I do 5 pages a day. One of the things that I have a little post-it note right next to my computer. I'm looking at it right now. It's a little post-it note that says, today I give myself permission to write crap.
Love that.
Is that I've got to write 5 pages, but they don't necessarily have to be good pages. What I found is a trap for easy to fall into is that you think you have to write perfect prose, and that can just, you're not going to hobble you. You got to let that editor go in your head and just put those words on paper. And it's, you know, it's much easier to edit what's there versus trying to create perfect prose sentence by sentence by sentence.
Amazing advice. Give yourself permission to write crap. I think that's the perfect place to sign off. We got it. And best of luck out there on the tour, the rest of the promotion.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yep.
Okay. I lost you for a minute. Sorry. Okay, you still with me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Okay, okay. I don't know. Did you stop speaking and I just didn't pick up?
Yeah, I stopped speaking and I thought maybe you were like looking, you looked up. You drifted off to sleep there for a while.